the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And welcome to our wrap-up episode on worker placement games. We played three games: Architects of the West Kingdom, The White Castle, and Alchemists. And yeah, all three had very different ways the workers worked. And there's so many worker placement games out there but the basic idea, as most of you probably know, if you're a game designer listening to this podcast, but usually worker placement games have some sort of little wooden meeple, classically, and you're placing down on an action spot, doing that action, and then oftentimes the worker spot you pick cannot be used by another player. That's like the classic way to do it. But there's all sorts of different variations on that. Like sometimes you can have a bunch of people on the same action spot, like in Architects of the West Kingdom. But then there's some other thing that happens that like pulls all the workers away. Maybe you run out of workers, and so at some point you have to pull them back. And really what it is just like a fun visual way to do action selection, I would say.
Well,
at its core.
And also action selection that interacts with other players' action selection.
Yeah.
I think that's the big component of it, that you're all doing action selection in a shared space where your selections will change the optimal move or the possible moves for other players.
And it could be softer, like the White Castle, where you can, you know, ultimately stack two dice on top of each other. So, like, it could pretty easily, you could do two actions per space. Or, yeah, like we had in West Kingdom Architects, where you could just do more people.
Yeah. Or, I mean, in Alchemist, too, you can go on a space someone else is going on. It's just the people who are there first are sometimes going to get better options.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we have previously covered other worker placement games. Bus, of course, is the big one that we have that we previously played. And Bus, honestly, might be my favorite worker placement game. In that one, you had a limited number. You had like 20 workers for the whole game, and you never got them back.
And which is
deciding
wild.
How to, yeah, that it's a super cool system. And you also had to assign them, but then sometimes you didn't even want to use them because when it got around to that space on the track, it was better for you not to use them than to use them.
So that is interesting, because as a worker placement game, you think like they're usually reusable.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost more like, yeah, assigning, I don't know, hiring military and risk or something, where populating the board at that point. It's like serving as a second purpose.
Well, yeah. And it's interesting too, a lot of the games that we played, or actually all the games we've played, don't fall into the trope that you can build out your action economy, which is a staple in a lot of worker placement games where you get more workers, like Agricola and things like that. But
yeah.
Ananda, you were talking about it to me one time. I'm like, I see where you're coming from. I could see why that doesn't feel as good from a game design perspective. Like,
it's a very obvious choice, right? Yeah. Like, workers are actions. More workers are more actions. Get more workers.
Yep. So whenever you can, just go for workers. Get more actions. Then you have more actions. And you can do more.
Yeah. So it may not be an accident that all of the ones we chose avoided that trope.
Yeah, unintentionally. I had forgotten how Architects of the West Kingdom, similarly, you have, I think, 20 workers or something.
Right.
But you end up just like piling them up on the same space.
But you do get to reuse those ones as opposed to
you
Bus.
You get to reuse those, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After they get caught and thrown in jail, and then you pay a ransom to get them back. And
yeah. Yeah. And another very unique one is Tzolk'in.
Yes.
Because in Tzolk'in, you place your workers, and then you get to resolve their actions when you pull them back. Mm-hmm. But if you wait, they get better and better actions.
They progress.
Yeah, like because
on the gears.
On the gears, yeah. There are these gears that are turning, and every time they rotate a sector, the worker's action gets more powerful. So if you wait long enough, it'll become very powerful.
One kind of mechanic we didn't have in any of these games is having different types of workers. What are your guys' thoughts on games that use different types of workers in it?
Let's see.
Yeah.
Can you think of an example?
Charterstone is the big one that comes to mind because it goes really intense about how they go about it.
Oh yeah. Slight spoilers if you're going to play Charterstone, but
I won't go into depth about Charterstone's different workers. Yeah. There is a little worker and a big worker. I think you start with those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you get some bonus
special workers.
Yeah. I enjoy different types of workers. I mean, like, personally, I have the game Ringyo is coming out that has many different types of workers. But that's another story. And we realized that maybe it doesn't qualify as a traditional worker placement board because you're
a worker usage game.
You have your own board that you're placing these workers down. But the fact that you have variety in them, like, I think anything where you can give like a gradient to your objects. And I would argue that actually the White Castle is kind of like that because you're using dice instead.
Yes.
So dice have the built-in gradient of how good they are.
Yeah. That's true. And they change.
And the big dice are strictly better than the little dice in that one.
Yep.
Which I don't think is necessarily a problem to have some workers be strictly better than others as long as everyone has access to the same ones.
Especially when you choosing the worst worker means that you get a special benefit by going from the left side of the bridge.
Yeah. And it's also gives you the choice of, okay, where do I allocate the good ones versus the bad ones? You know, what actions do I care more about than the other actions? Yeah.
There's another game that came to mind, the Manhattan Project. It's been a little while since I've played, but I believe there's a couple types of workers. Like there's scientists and something else, maybe military people. Or, anyways, they're like thematically distinct workers that can only go to certain spots, which I think is cool. Or you get a bonus when you go to certain spots. But I like that because then you can have a big pool of workers, but thinking about like, oh, well, I know these can only go to this region, so I have to like use this idea carefully. Use this batch of them.
Another interesting mechanic I've seen, which takes worker placement in a little bit of a different direction, is you can go on a spot where another player is, but that bumps them.
Yeah.
And they get something for being bumped. So then there's this sort of prediction element to it of, oh, where do I think other players are going to want to go? Because I'm going to go there and then I'm going to get bumped and get extra stuff.
It's really interesting choosing something because of someone else might try to choose that too. You know, having that be part of your choice matrix. It's fascinating.
Yeah, well, and it's also, it is a similar, similar type of incentive to the stereotypical you can't go on the same place another player has gone, but it's changed the framing so that instead of you're drafting to deny or you're placing to deny, you're placing because you want to get something, right? It's rewarding you for the choice instead of punishing someone else for your choice, which is a little bit friendlier, I think.
Well, and that person may now still want to avoid going there unless they really want to go there.
Yeah.
And so it creates an interesting dynamic in the game. Much more so than it being stagnant and you just like blocking people from going there.
Yeah, I think it's often good to try to change negative interactions into positive ones.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. I also agree. I think like Charter Stone is one that's really nice about the bumping mechanic. But I know we were throwing shade on the classic worker placement a little, like of just blocking, but maybe we can think about like what is the positive side of that that makes it tense and fun, and why that genre really caught on.
I mean, you may want to vie more if it is around structure for going first or for making sure that you do procure the area that you want to go on sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
It changes up the opportunities available to players.
Yep.
So that, you know, you might have a plan, but then you have to change your plan, and that forces you to go in a direction you weren't originally going to go and explore a strategy you might not otherwise have explored, because you can't necessarily optimize your gameplay because other players are going to get in the way. And I think that's in general, getting people to explore other strategies, I think is good.
Yeah.
Because then they have unexpected success.
Yeah, and thinking about the opposite end of the spectrum where you have a game where you have your own action options that you can do on your turn. No one can interact with those. Sometimes that kind of game can be overwhelming or maybe just like not as meaningful. Like, well, I can do any action I want on the list. Usually the tension in those kind of games is you are taking one action at a time, so you have to like time it out and make sure you do the thing you really need to do on that turn, and efficiency engine kind of thing. But yeah, that's just there's like so many fascinating ways to do action selection. And worker placement feels like some of the other ones, like, you know, like the older ones, like Puerto Rico or something, where you're grabbing an action that only you can do. Yeah. And
or it was a
action drafting.
Lead follow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I really, I'm really curious, actually, how many worker placement games also combine with an element of tableau building or of having these engine building concepts that enter your space that allow your workers or allow something to be a little bit better in some cases. It feels like it's a very consistent theme. Well, mechanic.
Yeah. Well, I have seen that a lot where there's like locations on the main board you can go to. But then there's also locations that you can create in your tableau that are private and only you can go there. Well, we saw that in the White Castle because on your board you can develop those spaces. And in that game, it disincentivized you from using those spaces because they're so expensive.
Yeah, they're sixes.
Which I think is probably necessary because if the whole point of worker placement is that you are interacting with other players' action selection on a shared board, you do not want players, I think probably you don't want players' own personal boards to be superior. Otherwise, you know, they're just going to stay at home and not go to the main board. So
they're not going to go to town. They'll just stay at their home.
Yeah.
I did have a theme idea for a game that I tried a little bit about like introverts and extroverts.
The introverts
have their, if you want to play the introvert style, like you have your own board that you're doing actions on, and if you're leaning extrovert, you're going to be more in the middle.
That sounds a little bit like A Place for All My Books.
On
that game, I think that game is, if I remember, it is a worker placement game. It's the type where you get stuff for getting bumped. I think I may be. I only played it like once or twice. But in that game, you change between staying at home and reorganizing your book collection, or going into town which is the shared board to get more books to bring back home.
Okay.
You have like, I think it had some sort of energy or social energy meter in it that gets charged up while you're at home and depleted while you're outside.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
I think. Hopefully, I'm not just
Mike Mihilsik game right there. That's cool. Well, what else would you guys do with a worker placement game?
I think if I were making a worker placement game, I would want to make something similar to Bus in the respect that I want a system where players set up actions but don't necessarily resolve them. Like some of the actions that they place a worker on are just to affect what other players are going to do, even if they don't choose to actually resolve that action.
Sure.
I think that's a really cool thing because it makes players consider the value of the optionality of the things that they're taking. Not just the raw value, but the value of having the option to do the thing. I think how Bus does that is great. And I would like to make something similar to that if I was making a worker placement game.
Do you think you'd keep the like hard cap of the number of workers and then not have a...
I don't think that's necessary to...
Sure. Capture what you're going for.
Yeah, what I'm interested mostly is in the way that it makes you value optionality.
Sure.
And the limited actions over the course of the game aren't key to that.
It makes me think, like, maybe there's probably a game out here like that, but like worker placement plus area majority or some sort of area control-ish game where it's like, you can go to a place and do actions, but maybe there's more powerful spots in terms of board state. Like maybe it's a mix of between, and I think that could be really thematic too, because you've got like, well, I'm going to go to the inn to do an action there. Actually, I'm going to like go to this mountaintop because I can like control more space or something like that. I don't know.
So it's not the same as what you're saying, but the game Archmage, not to confuse with my game Archmagus, that's still in development.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, this has been a thing for a while. But Archmage is an area control-ish game. Oh, yeah, I'd say area control game with an interesting worker mechanic. I don't want to call it worker placement, but that is exactly what you're doing. But by placing apprentices in your kind of color wheel of magic, you unlock different spells from the spell book. And then they can merge together to create higher tier spells that are combinations of elements. But then you remove the previous version, so you actually lose two spells to gain one spell. And it's really interesting how that kind of all works together. But yeah, there are also workers out on the field who are kind of controlling the area and... You have monsters and things. It's an interesting game, but it's not a worker placement game. It's kind of a funky dudes on a map hybrid. Yeah, I think if I were to work on a game like this, a worker placement game, I'd really want to play with the engine building sub game and see what could come from that. And I'm not entirely sure in what way. Like, obviously, tableau building is the most straightforward. You know, you have these, like in what we just played with Alchemist, you have these artifacts that you could, you know, enhance different properties of different parts of the game. So maybe you get money at different elements or at different times that other people wouldn't. Stuff like that, I think, is a great little boon, but maybe even take that a few steps further. But not having the placement on your tableau, having the placement still be using the main board.
Well, our Architects actually also had a pretty good tableau building part to it, where you can get the, I don't remember what they were called, like
apprentices,
apprentices. Yeah. You could get apprentices, and the apprentices were actually tied to specific locations on the board. Yep. so that it changed how much you valued that location, which is great. I think it's very good to have people value common game elements differently,
yeah,
because it means that when you fight over those elements, and I guess there wasn't as much direct fighting over the spaces on the board in Architects, but when you're fighting over elements and you value them differently, then the player who values it a lot can win the fight and feel good about that, and the player who doesn't value it very much can lose the fight and still feel fine about that because they're like, okay, well, I don't care. You know, this is...
especially if you made the other person expend extra resources to do it.
Yeah.
Then you feel clever for doing that.
Yeah. I think anytime you can create a conflict where both players feel like in some way they came out ahead, I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. A mutual conflict resolution.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep. And my thing I always think about is like, ooh, if you lose out on something, how painful is it on your strategy? Like, oh, I didn't get this thing. Oh, now my entire game is ruined. Or is there enough flexibility in the game where it's like, oh, I can immediately start rethinking about what else I'll do to solve this problem? And that's a sign of a good game when you get, whether it's a worker placement game or it's like a war game or whatever, if you get... something negative happens to you, can you recover? And actually, is it more interesting because now you have a challenge to overcome?
I mean, I like to think of it as every setback should have an opportunity with it to go in a different direction. Like, yeah. Imperial Settlers is probably my favorite example of this, where when somebody else destroys one of your buildings, you get a foundation and a wood that you can use to build a more advanced building of your type. And, you know, it feels not that bad because it's like, okay, you know, you got attacked. Now here's this new resource you have. Find a way to make use of it and pivot to something else.
That's cool.
So I'm going to do my takeaway. And it's going to be from a game we didn't play. And I keep wanting to see this in more worker placement games. But from Lords of Waterdeep, being able to own structures, and Charterstone 2, they have a very similar concept there. But just being able to own structures so that when people use it, you get a benefit for their using it. I think that's a really cool thing. And then also creates like a versatile setup so that, you know, multiple new buildings can enter and multiple new actions can enter the game. And have those be under control of a person, I think, is a really cool idea. That's all I got.
Lahav is another game that does that. It's another worker placement game, but you only have one worker.
Oh, okay.
And you move them around between different buildings directly instead of pulling them back or whatever.
Yeah.
In Lahav, you're building out the town, and you own some of the buildings, and when people come to the building, you get a little something like food or a coin or something. And yeah, it feels super good.
Oh, yeah. It's so great. Because you feel like you're creating this in-demand thing and that you made that judgment correctly and then you're getting the benefits from it. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. It's a great passive trade system.
Yeah.
As opposed to active trade where players are negotiating.
And maybe people have a shop. Boycotting you because you've made too much money.
Yeah.
Just like the real world.
Yeah, definitely agreed. I think that's ownership of action locations.
Yeah.
Is great. Definitely. I have a takeaway. We saw this probably most in Architects, but I think one thing that is very important in worker placement games is variable action efficiency, where an action can yield radically different results depending on the current situation. So in Architects, of course, the main factor affecting action efficiency was how many workers do you have at the place? Because if you've got one worker, then you're not going to get very much. But if you have like four workers, then you're going to get a lot of stuff, and other people should probably be rounding up your workers at that point. And I think part of this is that part of the fun of worker placement games is the fact that the opportunities available to players are changing because of how everyone is interacting with the common board and sort of changing which actions are good or bad. And so the skill is like, okay, well, which action should I take now? Should I take the one that is continuing my strategy, or should I take advantage of this opportunity that just came up? And the more you can vary the efficiency of an action, the more interesting of a choice that becomes of where to place your worker. And this is one area where Alchemist is not quite as strong as the other two. I did feel like in Alchemist, the value of the actions did not change as much. And actually, now that I think about it, that might be a downside of the round-based structure. Because in the turn-based structure, a lot can change in between your turns. But mm-hmm. in the round-based structure, everything's kind of set from the beginning. So you are usually just going to be following your plan. So that's maybe the downside to that system. But yeah, I think variable action efficiency is very important in worker placement games.
Yeah, and you know, something that didn't come up as much in any of the games we played, but it is a cool thing that you can do in worker placement games, where give players the feeling like, I really need to take this action now because I think someone else is going to take it. Or maybe I hold off because it's going to be more valuable to do something else right away. And I think I can hold off and no one's going to take that spot. So it's like, again, like we kind of talked about predicting. But like, if you have this like chain of predictions that you're trying to do, that can be really intense, sometimes like annoyingly tense in these kind of games.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's the thing that's like sometimes annoys me, when it's like you're thinking so hard for so long, and then everyone at the table is thinking, and then one right before your turn comes, someone picks the one spot that you needed, and like, oh no, I gotta rethink. So I almost feel like those kind of really tight punishing worker placement games are better if it's quicker kind of game. But before I do my takeaway, I'll share one interesting fact of my game history. So my friend Eric keeps track of all the games we play, and we give him a rating, you know, 1, 0 to 10, although 5 to 10 in reality, because I don't think I ever rate anything lower than 5. But the interesting thing, he has his own app that like ranks all games and all their stats, and he gave us a list of our favorite mechanics. And I guess, where do you think worker placement would be for me?
Well, based on the framing of this, it's either going to be very high or very low. So I'm going to guess. Wait, sorry, you're saying the rank out of how many games?
Oh, just of all mechanics. Like, where do you think it's stacked up?
Mechanics. How many mechanics are we talking? Well, I guess
I don't remember.
The fact
a
that you're
lot.
Not prefacing
it's
with
like
it
all the BGG
that
mechanics
makes me think that it's high up. Otherwise, you would probably have said how many mechanics there are.
Top five.
So I'm going to guess it's number one.
It was second from the bottom.
Whoa!
Tricked me.
Totally blew my mind. I don't hate worker placement, but
you sure,
I think
Charlie?
Maybe I do. I don't know.
I don't hate trick taking games. Charlie actually hates worker placement games.
No, I think what happened is, you know, like there's a lot of middling worker placement games out
that
there.
That is very true.
And I think that's not in my detest too.
That's my issue with them.
Yeah. So what we need, you designers, keep doing more innovative things with the worker placement. But I also, my ratings skew a little bit towards like, oh, this game was quick to learn, quick to play, and the amount of fun I got out of it was high. Whereas you need a certain amount of rounds for worker placement to pay off, and
then it might not still.
But yeah, I think my takeaway from this series, though, other than reaffirming that yes, I do like worker placement games, is that the dice in the White Castle. I think was the most interesting, like, to have this gradient of how much your worker is valued at any given time. So yeah, I'd love to see some more of that where and the other thing about that one is you're drafting the workers, so they're not even your supply,
right?
But that's kind of cool too. Like, it you can still get the same feel even if they're not your own personal collection. So yeah,
there we are.
There we are. Worker placement. Tune in next time when we figure out what our next series is going to be.
No, we obviously know already, but it's a secret.
Yeah.
We will know by the time you listen to this. We have
endless mechanic ideas and game ideas, of course, but you can always share your ideas too, and we'll try to get those in.
You can do so by joining the Discord and asking us directly, or emailing us at the tabletop.
I'm about to say that in the outro.
Oh yeah, yeah. But we're going to say that now. Wait. So that they actually don't just turn off and go to the next episode.
Yep.
Because we know you guys.
We'll see you next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.